ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 32, Text Number 11. The chapter is entitled Entanglement and Fruitive Activities. Kapila Dev is speaking to Devahuti. He's still answering a question that was asked 7 chapters ago. He gives a pretty thorough answer to her question. Her question in chapter 24 was how to get relief from entanglement and attachment to the material conception of life or family life. That the scene is Karnamuni has just left after thousands of years of being together and living in the life and austerities in the forest as the Brahmana and his good wife, Devahuti. And as was promised by Swayambhu Manu to Karnamuni Muni, that when there was a child, male child of age to take care of Devahuti, he would return to the forest. So sure enough, he did. And she's feeling intense separation, lamentation, attachment. And she's recognizing that's the cause of her suffering. She's saying that the illusory energy has covered me, so my real consciousness, my real purpose, my real identity is now covered by that illusory energy, and I'm experiencing different, she describes, different symptoms of being covered. Because this potency is your potency, you can remove it, please remove it. And this is a continuation of his response. Immediately he describes the cure, and that's sadhu sangha, so the whole chapter on through association of devotees, devotional service, and through devotional service, connection with our original consciousness, the slackening of the illusory potency. And so many other things are described. Just the previous chapter, following the Sankhya delineation of categories of matter and spirit and how the whole material energy unfolds from its unmanifest to its manifest state, then there's the living entity. And the living entity becoming involved or implicated in matter from conception, and what that experience is like from the living entity within the womb's perspective, and then birth, and then babyhood, and so it comes to the stage of adult life. the previous chapter ends, movements of the living entity. So it's from preconception to conception and all the stages and following that. Here's his conclusion from the previous chapter. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as the soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. So, knowledge and detachment. The final verse is strengthened by devotional service. Endowed with the right vision and strengthened by devotional service and a pessimistic attitude towards material identity, one should relegate his body to this illusory world through his reason, of course strengthened by devotional service. Then one can be unconcerned with the material world. So knowledge and detachment through the strengthened by devotional service. That's the previous chapter. The stage of the living entities evolving up to adult's stage of life is now moving into chapter 32, where they enter into household life. This is a householder chapter. And Kapila Dev he's still responding to her question. There's life in attachment and there's life in detachment in household life. So the two terms, Grihamedi and Grihastha, attached and cultivating spiritual attachment, is how he begins the chapter. Compare and contrast these two. The picture, without the detail, the picture is, it looks good and it brings misery. Happiness and motive passion, basically fruitive activities, are driven by the motive passion. And happiness and the motive passion, in the beginning seems to be very nice, and the end is misery. Due to the attachment to fruitive activity, enjoying mood in the field of the material energy, devotional service, he says, such persons are ever bereft of devotional service, being too attached to sense gratification, and therefore they perform various kinds of sacrifices and take great vows to satisfy the demigods and forefathers. They are not interested in Krishna consciousness devotional service. So they do something else that has a different target, increasing sense gratification, pravritti. So they may be religious in that sense, but blind to the real purpose of life. And so on. Then he goes to the other side, the Grihastha. Those who are intelligent and are a purified consciousness are completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Freed from the modes of material nature, they do not act for sense gratification. Rather, since they are situated in their own occupational duties, they act as one is expected to act. So his emphasis, and Prabhupada expands on it in the purports, is because of being embodied, having a bad bargain, I thought it would be enjoyment and it was something else. There's impulses born of the body or the modes of nature, and his advocacy is not impersonalism. His advocacy is, that is, just call it false and give it a bad name and renounce the world. His advocacy is performance of duties and detachment. Text 6. By executing one's occupational duties, acting with detachment, and without a sense of proprietorship or false egoism, one is posted in one's constitutional position by dint of complete purification of consciousness, and by thus executing so-called material duties, he can easily enter into the kingdom of God. This is standard. The way it's expressed is very nice, or unique, very analytical. But the principle is a standard principle in Vaishnava teaching. We don't say the material energy is false. It's energy, it's Krishna's energy. Its particular configuration is illusory. It's temporary, therefore illusory, in that sense. So while in this illusory realm, now you see it, now you don't realm, we carry out our duties according to the codes of scripture, according to our position, under proper guidance, and the main focus is not give it up, the main focus is consciousness, fixing one's consciousness upon Krishna, the personality of God, the source of all of this illusory energy, and all spirit souls that are moving about the illusory energy, the source of everything. By this process of hearing and chanting, bringing the consciousness in contact with the Supreme. That purifies consciousness, and in that state of purified consciousness, duties can be executed with detachment, without an expectation of sense gratification, without a false sense of proprietorship, without false egoism. Those are symptoms of pure consciousness. That's the alternative to the fruitive activities program. Text 7. Through the path of illumination, such liberated persons approach the complete personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of the material and spiritual worlds and is the supreme cause of their manifestation and dissolution. So, he then goes to describe the meditators, the Paramatma attracted persons. And their worship is described. And he says that those persons that worship Hiranyagarbha is the term, or Garbhadakshai Vishnu, they remain within the material world until the end of two prarardhas, that's the end of Brahma's day, excuse me, Brahma's life. After experiencing the inhabitable time of the three modes of material nature, known as two prarardhas, Lord Brahma closes the material universe, which is covered by layers, and goes back to Godhead. The yogis will become detached from the material world by practice of breathing exercises and control of the mind, reach the planet of Brahma. This is an answer to the question, what happens to really, really qualified yogis? They go to Brahmaloka. Then it says, after giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma. And therefore, when Lord Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. Then, this morning's verse. So, don't be a Grihamedi, we want to go, detachment is incomplete if it's just the yogis disconnecting themselves by mechanical means and even worshipping Hiranyagarbha. Therefore, this morning's verse, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart. So, this is Satya Yuga, and the process of achieving perfection in Satya Yuga is process of meditation. The meditation process involves meditation on the Lord of the heart, not just meditation on nothing, meditation on the Lord of the heart, the Personality of Godhead who is situated in everyone's heart. But that meditation is not complete unless the process of devotional service is also undertaken. Certainly Kapila Deva, an incarnation of Krishna, is going to teach devotional service, as so many seven chapters ago, the whole chapter dedicated to that. Here's the purport. One can attain direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness and revive one's eternal relationship with Him as a lover, as Supreme Soul, neutrality, as son, as friend, or as master. One can establish the transcendental loving relationship with the Supreme Lord in so many ways, and that feeling is true oneness. The whole purport is dedicated to this. The oneness, the Achintya Veda Veda type of philosophy, the oneness with the Supreme is the oneness of love. The oneness of the Mayavada philosophers and the oneness of the Vaishnava philosophers are different. The Mayavadi, listen to this sentence, the Mayavadi and Vaishnava philosophers both want to merge into the Supreme, but the Vaishnavas do not lose their identities. So a different kind of merging terminology. It's become one with, so then he explains. In the transcendental world, the servant and master are one. That's the oneness aspect. There's the difference aspect. There's two. There's servant and there's master, and there's three. There's the process of service or exchange. I'll read it again. In the transcendental world, the servant and the master are one. That is the absolute platform. Although the relationship is servant and master, both the servant and the served stand on the same platform. That's the where the philosophically Prabhupada is drawing the oneness. The oneness, they're one because they're of the same on the same platform. They stand on the same platform. That is oneness. If that's the only section of the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam that one had access to, one might think, oh, impersonalism is the answer. It's not the whole sum totality of devotional of the Bhagavatam. It's a specific feature. Prabhupada is wanting to emphasize a particular thing. The oneness. The sense of being servant of the master and so connected between the servant and the master that by Krishna's arrangement he elevates that individual to the same platform as himself. Brahmabhutta prasanatman asociatina kamsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim lavate param. Devotional services from that platform, the Brahmabhutta platform, the Brahman platform. And when thus engaged, the soul is, one can reasonably say, in a state of, on the same platform as the Supreme, in that sense, in the state of oneness with the Supreme. That's the, and the Vaishnava philosopher that is interested in coming to that stage. The language he's used is, they want to, both want to merge into the Supreme. But the Vaishnavas do not lose their identities. They want to keep the identity of lover, parent, friend, or servant. Because the first list, Prabhupada included a relationship with the Supreme Soul, with capital S. That's neutrality. Of the five rasas, that's neutrality. And following neutrality is service, and he's teaching devotional service. Devotional service begins with dasya. So, it'll be explained going into the chapter, so I won't spend the time just now. But the process of meditation on super soul, as Kapila Deva's teaching, doesn't stop at the neutrality stage. The previous verse is explaining, for some it does. For his teaching, it doesn't. It enters into the realm of devotional service, or in that state of meditation, like the example from Nectar Devotion of the elder Brahman who worshipped all his life. When he became very old, he couldn't move around, so he meditated. He did his manasa puja. He burnt his thumb in sweet rice. So, although it's just in his mind, he was engaged in devotional service because his physical capacity didn't permit to go get all the ingredients and do everything. Something like that is what Kapila Dev's Satya Yuga process of devotional service, when the mind is completely absorbed and fixed, as a Vaishnava or devotee of the Lord, one wishes a relationship of the Lord of servitor, friendship, parental, or conjugal love. Like Kardama Muni, he was engaged in meditation. And on Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu appeared. Recognizing that the desire of Kardama Muni was to have Lord Vishnu as his son. He was in meditation on Super Soul. His devotion was to have, was Vatsalya Rasa. And so Lord reciprocated and appeared as his son. It's different than just the neutrality stage, is the point. As Kardama Muni did, Kapila Dev's teachings are explaining. One who's on that, in that stage of practice or execution of the process of meditation and devotional service, that person stands on the same platform as the Supreme Lord. That kind of oneness, still with the relationship of servitor and served. Lord Kapila advised his mother that she did not need any indirect process. That's what's said in the at least in the translation, I don't see the word direct. My dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that the contrast is other processes that are indirect are not needed, specifically demigod worship. or the other procedures of fruitive activities in the dharmic sense, where taking shelter of worship of the demigods through various rituals, that's not needed. Directly, the personality of Godhead through devotional service is what's needed. She was already situated in that direct process because the Supreme Lord had taken birth as her son. Actually, she did not need any further instruction because she was already in the perfectional stage. Kapila Deva advised her to continue in the same way. Going back to her question, when she asked that question in chapter 24, the text describes that Kapila Deva mildly smiled, and the purport Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said his smile was, he was thinking, "Devotee, what are you talking about?" Attached and bewildered and lost the sense of the soul's real self-interest. I mean, the very nature of your question shows you know about all these things. Why do you say you've lost it? And besides, you're my mother, and I'm the personality of Godhead. You're so qualified. But because you're asking this question, I can understand you're asking for the benefit of others, and I'll reciprocate with you, and for the benefit of others, I'll give the answer. So, here, in this purport, Prabhupada is saying the same thing. She's already on this perfectional state, so Kapila Deva advised her to continue in the same way. He therefore addressed his mother as Bhamani, to indicate that she was already thinking of the Lord as her son. Devahuti is advised by Lord Kapila to take directly to devotional service Krishna consciousness, because without that consciousness one cannot become liberated from the clutches of Maya, which was her question. How do we become liberated from the clutches of Maya? The verse is just reconfirming the theme of the whole section, the teachings of Lord Kapila Deva. And then the teachings of Lord Kapila Deva take a point about those teachings and just drill down and down and down and down and comes back up and repeats the point. So the theme is not lost. Meaning, the details of how the elements unfold, and it's very, on one hand, complex, on the other hand, very fascinating, very deep and profound. What's the purpose of all of that? It comes back up. It's your real identity is spirit soul. And if you don't regard the material elements properly, you'll think of yourself as the proprietor, or potentially the proprietor, and thus become entangled in fruitive activities. So don't make that mistake, because you should know this is a manifestation of the Lord's energy in all of its diversities and complexities. Then go back up. You stay fixed in devotional service. And then there's all kinds of things that, you know, the tendency of fruitive activity, the pushing of the motive passion, and it goes down and down and down and comes back up. So he's exploring with Devahuti the nature of being in Maya, the nature of being entangled in material existence, the nature of complex life that comes from material identification, evaluates it, explains it, gives different examples, goes into great detail, and then comes back up to the platform of devotional service, which is a position of direct shelter with the personality of Godhead, while still dealing with the material energies, which are his energies, Krishna's energies, and acting in a proper way, in a mood of attachment to Krishna, thus detachment from the circumstances. And in that condition, the emphasis here, the purport is, that's the position of oneness. Not where identity is lost, but where identity is very, very clear in relation with the personality of God, and oneness in that sense, standing on the same platform. Just the last comment on this is, during Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life, Prabhupada was recognized by Bhaktisiddhanta for a very brilliant offering, Vyasa Puja offering, I believe, where Prabhupada in great length was explaining Guru as one. And I've had conversations with devotees who've studied that and got bewildered by it a little bit. What does it mean, Guru is one? Why is Prabhupada writing like that? Why is Bhaktisiddhanta appreciating like that? This is the message expressed very succinctly. On the same platform is that sense of Guru is one. Not the person is a non-person, or the person is the same person. It's on the same platform. Different souls, different personalities, different ways of going about doing things, but on the same platform. That's representing Krishna in that sense, on the same platform. And that, now, so just back to how the person who is engaged in devotional service can be, when seeing them, can be reminded of Krishna, it's the same thing. When Lord Chaitanya is describing to the residents of Kalinagram about who is a Vaishnav, one of the Uttama Bhakta position of Vaishnav is, when just seeing the person, you are inspired to chant and you think of Krishna just by seeing the person. Their spiritual stature is such, their spiritual potency is such. They're not Krishna, but their presence reminds one of Krishna. Naturally. That's the platform of oneness that he's speaking about. Same thing. Not Krishna, but one thinks of Krishna by seeing that person. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Comments? Something?
Guru Maharaj, I want to understand, when we say that the relationship with the spiritual master is eternal, it's somewhat easier to understand, like in the future, or like if the relationship is being cultivated sincerely, then that might give opportunity for that to continue even beyond this lifetime. But how do we understand, like, in the past?
Oh.
Is that relationship still there?
I've never heard that question asked. And never contemplated it. It seems, having never read anything in scripture about it, it seems that it's speaking of, once established, it's not broken. That's the meaning. Not eternal in the absolute sense of eternal, in both directions of time. Once established, it's not broken. It continues beyond the body.
I have another question from the weekend program that you gave in the Brooklyn Temple. Yes. You brought the theme of like three main qualities that Sita Devi was mentioning about. Like one was that one should not try to speak, not speak, but one should not
speak falsely,
deviate from the truth. The second one was that one should not covet wife or husband of another person. The third one was like one should not unnecessarily do any cruelty, inflict any cruelty upon others. And that specifically was used in the context of Lord Ramachandra killing the demons who had not particularly done any harm to them, but creating a lot of nuisance. So from, just to understand the third point, is that that when those who are situated on a spiritual level, they are able to see that their activities are harmful in general also to themselves, so to protect that, they are taking some countermeasures, and that is within the religious principles.
Well, sure, neglect to do the right thing is also harmful, self-harmful. And
so when Ramachandra responded saying that I always uphold the religious principles, that's what he intended to.
And I will not deviate from that. So because I have my, because I have a sword, because I have bow and arrows, it will not. It's not going to go to my head. I'll not be. I will not succumb to that weakness. Of. Rather, the action against the rakshasas is dharmic. And, you know, it's the nature, it's the duty of the king to give protection. For that purpose, I will do. So supposing somebody's a police officer, and you know, a criminal has attacked the police officer, he still has his duty to deal with the criminal. That's what he's saying. You know, they didn't. If the criminal directly attacks the police officer, certainly he's duty-bound to do something. But that's not the only circumstance. So, for a kshatriya, if the kshatriya is attacked, it's just by codes of dharma. For anyone is attacked, to give protection. So, but that's not the only circumstance. So, It's an innuendo, it's subtle, but her concern was simply because you have these powerful instruments, the tendency to inflict some cruelty upon others will be increased just by having these in your hand. And when you're in the palace, it's one thing, but when you're in the forest, and now you've taken this vow, I'm concerned. Because sometimes the rakshasas would say like that, what kind of forest dweller are you? Living in tree bark and walking around with a flashy sword. You're a pretender. So that's another false position, because he was acting as a kshatriya, although in exile. It was his, you know, let's say from the lila perspective, that was his nature. He was living according to his nature. Was giving protection, because his reasoning was the king's kingdom is all the lands, it includes the forests, and the sages that live within the forest, and they're seeking protection. So dharmic. I won't succumb to cruelty, acts of cruelty, unprompted, unjustified, because I have these powerful weapons. But you know, even just take something like technology. Technology that somebody that's not qualified gets their hands on some technology, and acts of cruelty can easily follow. People do hurtful things to other people because now they have this instrument. Then the application is, the context is different, and the application is different, but the principle is the same. Anything else?
Yes. One question on oneness. I'm understanding that it's on the platform of service. So the question I have is, right now when the focus is, or the priority is like the immediate family, and the service is within the family, so there is this feeling of oneness. But then when we come to a broader group of devotees, be it in the temple or some. I'm recently experiencing that the feeling of oneness is not feeling that belongingness.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because, so basically I'm trying to understand, while applying the principle of charity begins at home, how do we, and when there is
it
no...
But it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, but when there is no service in the... Because it's only on the platform of service that we feel that oneness with other devotee. So...
Well...
So how
does it... If that's how it's manifest, yes. But it does... supposing... like your circumstance, because of a newborn child, your time is absorbed in your duty, and that's what it should be. But it doesn't mean the rest of the world doesn't go out of existence, it's just time-bound. And time, that service will, other services will again resume. And for now, at this point in time, this period of time, the service is defined differently than before or after, later in time. So your frame of reference has shrunk because of circumstance, but it doesn't change the principle. So when with your present circumstance, when going into other social interactions, that your family duties permit, then it's an opportunity to expand that field. I mean, naturally, people want all the things centered around the child. Same thing as yourself. So they're sharing, the appreciation or the feelings, the affection. And that's a type of service, a type of social exchange where it let Krishna stay at the center. It's not just because it's time-bound, that circumstance is going to change in time. And it becomes something else, becomes something else, becomes something else. The shape is different through passage of time. But within this particular time frame, that's the focus. And other interactions can be within that context. And let it, two things. One is while you're doing your present service, beware or be alert to how much reinforcing the bodily identification might be taking place, as opposed to this is service for Krishna. There's a spirit soul entrusted, and my duty is in relation to the soul. I'm doing so many things in relation to the body, but that purpose is higher.
Mm-hmm.
So try to remain, when social circumstances are shrunken, and, you know, in inter-family and other, stay on the spiritual conception of what you're doing, for whom you're doing it. And with that, to the degree that that purpose is achieved, you're successful. When other circumstances and other circumstances arise, that's the platform from which you're operating, and you're not disconnected. It's just, it's like seasons. You know, sometimes it's winter season, and sometimes it's summer season, and sometimes it's fall season, and sometimes it's spring season. And spring season is a very nice season, but then it's over, and it's another season. So according to the circumstances, the cycles of life, and when that cycle starts to open to another cycle, then you're open to that, because it's just the platform of service. Service is being, by the movements of time, is being identified differently. Stay on the platform of service to Krishna, within the family and without outside the family, because it's service to Krishna. It's just differently defined in different circumstances of life. As time moves, all things. Anything else? Yeah?
Guru Maharaj, on this topic of attachment and self, but I'm wondering if, sometimes I wonder if I'm making a mistake by not catering to his needs when he might need it the most, like during his formative years.
What about going to work?
That's a tough one.
When verbal communication becomes possible, those things can be explained. And when prior to verbal communication, those things can't be explained. But prior to verbal communication, those things can be emoted, that is, acceptance and love and affection. And there are other parts of life besides just physical contact. I mean, think of the Vedic model. A village varnashram model. And each, you know, the Brahmana, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, and the Shudra, there's different parts of their day. That's, you know, traditional classic Vedic life, besides whatever the modern context. And it's not that the duty of the father was to stay at home, because the need of the small child is that they're always there. That's not the Vedic model. So rather, this is my sense, that when the experience is of acceptance and love and care and affection is there. There are other parts of the day when that's not physically being transmitted, but it doesn't stop even when the father is out of the house at work. The father is thinking of the child is thinking of the father, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the classical feature. And so aside from, okay, well, work I have to do, but this other I don't have to do. Mm-hmm. There are other callings or duties, civic, and so on and so on. Mm. So it can't be communicated verbally, but it can be communicated, what's the word, energetically or non-verbally.
Like among the three things, say parenting, occupational duty, and then this other preaching endeavor, is there like a priority, like, or it's also...
Well, there's worldly duties and there's transcendental duties, and one could say in the transcendental duty-wise, you know, they're all important. You eliminate something, and you won't be. You eliminate the outreach, and what comes to you from the outreach is Krishna is very pleased, as he says in Bhagavad Gita. You become very dear to Krishna. Mm. So eliminate that. That is that the right service, and it's not excessive or extreme. What you're doing, it's very reasonable, but should you just eliminate that? I wouldn't say you should eliminate that. Mm-hmm. The sensitivity is there, and so on and so on and so on. So mm-hmm. It's part of growing. It's not abandonment, it's part of, you know, the sense of the dependent and the one who one is dependent upon is not going to be always physically there, but will be as the, you know, thinking of each other mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a kind and caring way.
Maybe part of the nervousness is, what if in the future the child comes up to me and says, you weren't there when I needed you.
Well, the answer, I mean, energetically and factually, the answer is, you are there. Mm. And part of my being there is, as the provider of the family, and this is the spiritual nurturer of the family. Mm. It's not like, you know, the answer is a defensive answer, the answer is a realistic answer. Mm. In order to perform my duty to family, I need spiritual strength, so I can give that to the family. I need Krishna's mercy, so I can give that to the family. It's holistic. And from a holistic point of view, I'm there. There's just different parts of what the whole is. So it's the consciousness factor. Mm. Yeah.
In my service to her, I'm realizing that not having enough engagement.
Not having enough?
Engagement.
She?
Yes.
She doesn't have enough engagement?
I'm not able to engage her enough during the day in a very positive way, so...
I think she engages you enough.
So I want to understand, like, there are always various choices of how media is just very default way, but what are the, what could be some principles that could be followed to decide?
I have no experience in how to treat a child. You're asking the wrong person. Ask an experienced mother. That's the right person to ask that question.
Or in another way, I want to understand how to pass on a spiritual impression at this age.
By being spiritual. By being God-centered in your consciousness.
So activities may or may not hold that importance.
May or may not do what?
More importance than the consciousness.
Yeah. The essence is more important than the detail.
Mm-hmm.
You can have people that do lots of things and the consciousness isn't there, and people that don't do lots of things but the consciousness is there. Because they're just whatever it is, they're very simple and not necessarily very creative in how they do things. I know some people like that. And they're great sources of strength for others. They're not all over the place doing so many things, engaging people and doing so many things and keeping them, you know, fixed in Krishna consciousness from doing so many things. But their Krishna consciousness is very strong. And persons who have their association realize, wow, they're up there. So, although they're not being engaged. Now, that's different than, that's an adult as opposed to a child. Child wants to, you know, do stuff nonstop. But the essence is more important than the detail. Based upon the essence, you're interested in detail, but don't get lost and lose the essence. The essence is the essence. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.